Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Maureen Moakley is away this week. We're pleased to welcome as our guest Rhode Island Commerce Secretary Stephen Pryor. Thank you for joining us.
Great to be back with you, Ian and Scott.
Secretary Pryor, Deepwater Wind plans to invest $250 million while increasing its capacity for wind power off the Rhode Island coast. This will bring hundreds of construction jobs and about 50 permanent jobs. And Deepwater's CEO says the cost of energy produced by the new wind farm will be competitive with traditional energy prices. I'd like to ask you, was there a competitive process that led to Deepwater's selection for this project?
There sure was. We are pleased with the fact that Rhode Island was able to join forces with Massachusetts. Massachusetts issued a competitive solicitation to the bidders that would work in either state. Rhode Island was able to link up with that solicitation and with that process. And there was a competitive process with multiple bidders. And the beauty is that it worked out in a way that is truly beneficial to Rhode Island, because the homegrown Deepwater Wind was able to emerge victorious on the merits. And we are expecting to see, you've already mentioned it, we're expecting to see a dramatically lower rate from the initial offering of rates coming out of the Block Island 5 initial turbines with these 50 new turbines out in Rhode Island Sound. It's really exciting. It's hundreds of jobs. And it's also, it's a fulfillment of Governor Raimondo's pledge that she wants to see 1,000 megawatts of clean energy by 2020. We're already maybe 650 megawatts of the way, 400 of which are now pledged through this new Block Island extension into this new 50 turbines.
Now, you say there was an RFP process, but the news seemed to come as a surprise to a lot of people. How can we be sure that Rhode Island got the best possible deal for this process to increase wind capacity?
Well, the Office of Energy Research and the DPUC, the government agencies in charge, did a very thorough process, asked the bidders themselves. It was a rigorous process, as I understand it, as an outsider to that formal process. And there was a careful selection process to ensure that the best benefits for Rhode Island were yielded. So we're so pleased that as a result, Deepwater is getting it done. And we're expecting to see beyond the 800 construction jobs and 50 permanent jobs. Look at Blount Boat, which is building the boat that actually carries the workers out to the turbines to get the job done. Look at the specialty diving organization at Quonset that's hiring people for these purposes. Look at the real jobs trained personnel who are gearing up for these jobs. We're excited about what this is going to mean in opportunities for Rhode Islanders.
All right, let's go to Scott.
One of the problems we had with the Block Island wind farm is the rates. They're very, very high. And the manufacturing community in this state was so upset, they filed suit over it. Now, we don't know what this is going to cost, so how can you say this is going to be great?
The rates need to be set and they need to be agreed upon, but I can tell you from everything that we've heard, the rates will be dramatically lower. I know that the ratepayers of Rhode Islanders, are going to be very happy with the outcome here.
Now, does this mean that the Block Island wind farm then becomes obsolete because you're going to have a wind farm producing electricity at a much higher rate next door to one that isn't?
No, on the contrary, what the Block Island Wind Farm did is it made Rhode Island, positioned Rhode Island as pioneers in this field and enabled us to pull off this 400 megawatt deal because we've got the supply chain, we've got the provider in Deepwater Wind, we're ready to roll.
So that's great. I guess this means, with this optimistic view you have, that there's no need for this Burrville power plant. Is that correct?
That's for another day.
Well, I mean, if you look at that, one of the big criticisms has been that this Burrville power plant, the fact that everybody's going to renewables means it's only going to be good, it'll be obsolete in 6 or 7 years.
We do need a blend of power sources, of course, to reach the total needs of Rhode Island. But one thing that's really noteworthy here, I don't know if you caught it in the various announcements, up to the equivalent of 200,000 homes will be powered by this new 50-turbine setup. That's nearly half the households of Rhode Island. This is a major piece of progress.
I understand that, but Massachusetts is going deep into Canadian hydropower. How come we're not piggybacking on that?
We don't need to piggyback. We're leading the way on wind.
Let's switch gears and talk about the latest developments with the Paw Sox. House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello put his support this week behind a revised Paw Sox proposal. Speaker Mattiello says the difference is that the Pawtucket Redevelopment Authority, rather than state taxpayers, will be on the hook if there's a shortfall in revenue from the ballpark and its surroundings. But State Republican Chairman Brandon Bell says that state taxpayers could still wind up on the hook if the Pawtucket Redevelopment Authority couldn't afford to make up for a shortfall. Is that a legitimate point of view, Secretary Pryor?
No, very, very far-fetched. And he's obviously searching for a way to criticize. What I would say is Speaker Mattiello, to his credit, took his time, vigorously and rigorously searched for a solution here, a way to do yet better than the pre-existing deal. We have to examine it more closely, but I think that Speaker Nicholas Mattiello deserves our applause for helping to put a framework together that involves the state contributing its revenue, revenue that would be lost if the Paul Sox were to leave the state, contributing it, and relying upon the very able talent in Pawtucket to carry out this transaction and to make sure that we keep this team and that it continues to thrive here in Rhode Island.
That's a nice thing to say, but seriously now, I understand the speaker needs to save face here. His district's a very strong Republican Trump district, and I understand there was a lot of people against it. But look, it's going to cost us more to borrow, isn't it?
It is.
If we have the Pawtucket Redevelopment Agency here rather than the state, so aren't we increasing the cost of the stadium by doing this?
It is the case that there will be an increase in interest, presumably, on the bonds. We at the state, we at the in the administration need to look closely at this deal. But the reality is that the risk on the downside could be prevented in that if there were a worst case scenario, the state could have had more risk under the pre-existing scenario. That's what Speaker Mattiello has prevented against. We do need to look at precisely what revenues are necessary from the state. How do we ensure that they equal the bond servicing requirements and nothing frivolous or superfluous beyond that? We have questions to ask, but those questions are a welcome scenario. The fact that we can get there under the speaker's leadership, working with the governor and with the mayor of Pawtucket, it's exciting.
Finally, let's talk briefly about the race for governor. Governor Gina Raimondo this week announced her reelection campaign, and her message is that she has spearheaded a resurgence of Rhode Island's economy. We hear similar talk all the time from you, Secretary Pryor, but the Republicans, including Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, disagree, of course, and Cranston Mayor Alan Fung points to Cranston as a better way to develop the economy. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think that Governor Raimondo has improved the economy across the entire state, inclusive of the jurisdiction that you describe. And let me say a few things about that. First of all, it's not just improved. Empirically, here's what's going on. In the entire Northeast, in 2017, first quarter to fourth quarter, the biggest economic growth is in Rhode Island in the entire Northeast, 11th best growth in the United States. The earnings growth, that's average earnings, experienced by people in 2017 from January to December, the biggest growth in earnings was experienced in Rhode Island among the 50 states. The unemployment rate before Governor Raimondo arrived in 2014 compared to the unemployment rate in 2017 experienced the biggest drop as a percentage point compared to other states in the entire country. These are terrific improvements in our economy. That's why 27 and more every day companies are deciding in favor of Rhode Island, landing here and expanding here. We're excited to see in every city and town the economy grow. And Governor Raimondo is not going to be satisfied, believe me, I hear from her every single day, until all Rhode Islanders benefit.
We'll hear a lot more of the competing arguments about the race for governor in the months to come. We've got to leave it there because we're out of time. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And Rhode Island Commerce Secretary Stephen Pryor.
Thank you, Ian, Scott.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And as usual, you can find a lot more on our website at ripr.org.